Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. This week, we are talking about Phantom of the Mall, Eric's Revenge. I believe, Scott, this was your pick,
this
correct?
Is me. This is a me pick that could have been left for Listener Submitted Month, because I know somebody mailed in that this as a suggestion, and I was like, yeah, that's cool. And then I started watching a little bit of it, and I saw that it was a 4th of July horror movie. And I was like, well, this is as close as I'm going to get to a 4th of July movie.
We're still celebrating.
Yeah,
hey, we're patriotic.
We're celebrating
4th of July all month long. Baby. Yes.
Yeah.
At the mall.
Let's go
the motherfucking
to
mall.
The mall today.
Is this everybody's first time watch?
Oh,
no,
yeah.
I...
What?
So here's the thing with this movie. I grabbed this from VHS PS forever ago.
Fair.
Because I thought, oh, maybe this would be like a good episode for the podcast. And I remember not loving it. Like, I remember walking away from it being like, I don't think we're going to do that. And then Scott picked it, and I was at my friend's house, and their Xbox could not read my VHS PS DVD, like, try as I might. So I went and I watched it on Shudder, and watching it on Shudder was the first time I saw it in HD, and I was like, the first 20 minutes, I'm like, this movie's great.
Right.
Then we got to the middle of the movie, and I was like, I think this is why I second-guessed myself on picking this. And
what's your problem with it?
So here's my problem with this, and I said this in my Letterboxd review that I'm not sure if Kyle saw or not, but for a movie literally called Phantom of the Mall, Eric's Revenge, we sure spend a lot of film time trying to find out if it's Eric that's having revenge.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, it's true. Well, so then, you know, but they set it up as if there has been this pre-existing thing that maybe was a movie, maybe wasn't. I mean, to set this up so, like, blatantly, like a sequel, even though there's nothing that has happened beforehand, really, is kind of bizarre. So I guess it's like, oh, is it Jason or is it Jason's mom again in part two of Friday the 13th? It's like, is it Eric or is it not?
That's
even
true.
Though there wasn't a first movie.
It's got a strong first 20 and last 20. And then I think that middle 45 is like a real dice roll at
that
times.
Middle 45, the top of that middle section is Pauly Shore being our reliable narrator, which is kind of crazy to me, that we have to be like, oh, cool. Like, now it's like, oh, Pauly Shore is the person who's gonna tell us, like, really what's going on here at the mall. Like, I don't trust this dude. He wheezes juice too much.
Pauly Shore shows up and he's working at a yogurt shop, which is probably the career path he would have taken if his mom didn't own a very popular comedy club.
Yeah, it wasn't far
I wanted
off.
To know if he was a Nepo baby.
Yeah. He absolutely is. And you know what? I had to wear this shirt in honor of him for the Patreon, but of course I'm wearing... Oh, yes. The Pauly Shore VHS tape stack from a studio house for this one.
That's what's up.
But that being said, all joking aside, Pauly Shore is perfectly fine in this movie. Fine. Like
the least Pauly Shore I've ever seen him.
Yeah, he's kind of subdued to a certain point. It's like this and him in Goofy Movie are like the most relaxed Pauly Shore roles he's ever played.
It's true. It's
so true. The movie starts with, I mean, we're just going to say Eric. It's not like it's a surprise. Eric.
Wait. Are you saying that this is actually Eric, who's the Phantom of the Mall?
I know.
Crazy.
The Phantom of the Mall turned out to be Eric in Phantom of the Mall, Eric's Revenge. So
I think you're taking this shit way too seriously for what it actually was, you know?
But anyway, so he breaks into the mall. He has like a half mannequin mask on. And I love, he kills this night shift security guard. But big props to this movie for giving us a character who's not tricked by a person standing still.
Hey, you ain't no mannequin. This ain't Halloween, pal. That's a direct quote from the film, just so everybody knows.
Like, I was like, you know what? So many of these movies, just stopping and standing still works, and that would never work in real life, so I'm glad that right out the gate, they're like, no, fuck that. This is it. The mall's opening up. Our main character is Melody.
Even though, like, the mall is very hopping, like
it's hopping this pretty often for the grand opening still being in a few weeks.
yeah this I don't know exactly how this works long. Yeah, like they've been open for a year and they're like, oh hey, it's good to see you at it's your 1 year anniversary working at the yogurt shop, Pauly Shore.
Or it's the reopening of the mall after Chopping Mall happened, since
it's the same mall.
So I think that it's a grand reopening, maybe.
That's it.
If they're all in the same timeline.
This did come after. So, yeah, I think that's what happened. They had to clean up the mess of kids' brains all over the floor.
Everywhere. And now they're.
So, here's a question for you. This is a question that plagued me throughout most of the movie. If you just barely escaped death when someone burned down your boyfriend's house, would you get a job at the place, at the building that they built on top of the site of your trauma? Like.
It seems like everybody who's cool is getting a job there, though. So it's like, do you want to be left out? Do you want to, you know, I don't know what you want to do. Do you want to go work at the Circuit City down the street? I don't know what you want to do other than work at this mall.
That's
which is the coolest mall ever, apparently. It's just so fucking cool.
Everybody wants to be there.
Yes.
Everybody wants some, and I want some, too.
But no, I wouldn't. I would not go to a place. I would not work at the place of this just normal house that got burned down, and then this mall goes up a year later.
Which,
there's a lot of memories there. A lot of silk sheets from a lot of Eric's silk sheets get brought up three or four times. So the memory is still.
Like a lot of Final Girl booby in this, which is very strange.
Very strange. Yeah. I mean, look, this movie's not made to be hyper-analyzed, but a year is a wild turnaround time to build a full-scale three-floor mall.
I don't know. I'm thinking that they must have already had some of it in place, and then they were like, let's expand.
So Eric's house was just like, there was like a Sears and a JCPenney, and then Eric's house.
Yeah, dude. Why is it you? Okay, based on where you live, Matthew, I don't see why you're surprised by this, because for anybody that's not been to Matt's house, which is probably only like 5% of the people that listen to this podcast, because everybody's been to Matt's house.
Yeah, if they come to PA, I invite them. Come on, come on down to Matt's house.
Yeah,
Pittsburgh's not that far.
But anyway, Matt's house is surrounded. His entire fucking suburb of Philadelphia is one strip mall after another. It's just strip malls. And so Matt being like, how could this happen that this mall is right next to this idyllic little two-story? You live it, buddy.
That's true. That's you're true. Someone could be burning my house down right the hell now for property.
You got to get the silk sheets back. I'm obsessed with Eric's fucking bedroom, dude. I'm obsessed. This sultry, like, sepia tone.
And was there a fire? There's a fire going, too, right?
Oh, yeah. They just thought it was the heat of their passionate lovemaking at first, and then it turned out to be the
house
was on
fire. And then they touched the railing or the doorknob. And then they touched the doorknob and like, no!
You know what I love about that sex scene is that, it comes back and the second time around, and then it's the reporter, and you're like, yeah, I mean, everybody has weird little sex dreams, no big deal. It happens all the time. It's weird when your coworker who's married tells you that she had a sex dream about you as you're in the elevator going to your job together back in 2007, 2008. I wouldn't know anything about that, but
it's absolutely normal to have sex dreams
about the guy that's investigating your dead boyfriend's possible murder. But what isn't normal is the journalist
who looks approximately a year older than you, Max.
Yeah, and he's like out of so she's finishing high school. So and she's like, I need to save money for college, and he's like, I'm a reporter that has been pretty well established, and you know,
he was a reporter for the Town Talk magazine that shows up for free on Sundays. But the thing about it is that's not the sticking point for me here.
I think that you're missing the whole point about his age gap, which is non-existent. The sticking point that I have is the part where when Eric is like, I still love you and I'm gonna kill Andy or whatever the fuck his name is.
Peter.
She's like, you can't kill him. I'm in love with him. And Peter's not surprised. I was shocked. That was the denouement. I was like, where the fuck is this coming from?
Yeah. When did this happen?
In your dream. Literally in her dream. She's like, they've never touched. Nothing's ever happened. And she's just like, I'm in love with you. And he's like,
right.
Okay, I'm never dating another 17-year-old is what he's thinking.
No.
He was going to date another 17-year-old, but then he was like, this is probably problematic. So, yeah.
So we do need to talk about quickly in this movie. We get like three quick kills in the first like 20 minutes, and they are escalating in like cool. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like.
Eric's vibe is escalating and cool. Every time we see a little more Eric, I'm like, dude, this dude is so much cooler than me.
He's such a badass. He's like, he's half scarred and he's doing like his bow staff practices in the basement. Right.
I was waiting for him to fucking nail a kickflip. Just like cut
there
to
was
basement
so
again.
Much.
He got a funny fight scene that was so unnecessary.
Like the earring mercenary. You know, like I love that she's like, oh, he had this piece of silver hanging from his ear. I'm like, it's called an earring. I don't know if you know that, but it's called an earring.
I know you're 17.
Well, no,
but...
the worst part about it is that this dude's wearing his little silver earring, and then the owner of the mall's like, I told you, you got to get rid of that earring. It's a liability. And he reaches for it. He's like, I'll fucking kill you. Like,
if you touch my earring.
It's like the ugliest shit I've ever seen dangle from any human being's ear.
It looks like a golem had a wet fart. You know, like it just looks like a piece of metal that looks like a little turd.
It looks like something my grandmother would be wearing, which is why I don't understand why this, like, 30-year-old thug is like, yes, this is my calling card.
For my Disney folks, it looks like Joe Rowe, the Imagineer, always has dangly shit from his ear, and it looks like a poor man's Joe Rowe.
Joe Rowe would be the only person I've ever looked at and been like, yo, there's no way that ear is going to stay together. The amount of shit that he is dangling is...
Listen, Matt, do you remember that band, My Children, My Bride?
Scott, it's not about how much is gauged. It's about how much he's dangling through the hole for no apparent reason.
So you do remember My Children, My Bride.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. No, he has the same level of gauge, but if you look up a picture, he'll just have like... There's times where I'm like, does he have a fucking bird's nest dangling off of his ear? Like, what the shit is he putting in that hole?
Besides Eric, the looks of everybody in this movie is crazy. And the character, like, even the girl, the main character.
That's Mel. What's Mel's best friend's name? Susie?
Sure.
Oh, the one who gets assaulted by the mayor or
the pianist.
Jeez. Oh, the pianist is
the
right.
Pianist.
Well, I had a note.
Does Mel get attacked by the pianist? Yeah, because, yes.
Mel gets attacked by the pianist.
Because Susie then he shoots him with the crossbow from the ceiling
and
the mugging.
But that's a cool thing where he has to go take a shit and he takes off his, like, jacket, his suit coat, his like tuxedo coat, and it's like, hey, I'm bleeding still. And he's like, I thought that was a real fun little.
Dude. I mean, it's a fun reveal, but also it's been like 24 hours and it is a geyser of blood all over his shirt.
Yeah,
like he needs to get that shit checked out.
The question is, why are you trying to like assault women where you work? The dumbest
shit.
Bad call.
Did they establish that there was a pet store anywhere inside the mall? Because I'm curious where Eric is going to purchase poisonous snakes
with the snake.
Just at the will.
I don't even care because we're kind of jumping around in my notes because I know Matt lost
the
his
kills
notes, but
peak
the,
early and then they kind of get tamer and
they
tamer
get dumber.
They
but
down.
Well, yeah. The funny thing
because
is
the love
that,
story comes through.
Yeah,
the love story, because the when I was about 15 minutes into this movie. And the pervy security guard who's been spying on the women's changing room gets electrocuted to the point that his eyeballs burst out
and
of his head.
And one of the eyeballs goes into the frozen yogurt?
Yeah. I was like, this is unbelievable. This is so good. And then, like, I was like, all right, the poison in the snake, this is going to be kind of tame. But then, even, like, the owner's son, when it's, like, the escalator thing, I'm like, yo, this is going to be fucking gnarly.
Oh, that was pretty boring.
And then he just, like, spits up some ketchup when he reaches the top of the...
Yeah,
the escalator's like, man, they really blew their
special effects. Was that before or after
effects.
I think the elevator kill was before... So we get the elevator kill, and then we get the Viper to the dick, right?
No, the Viper's first, then the escalator.
Oh, escalator kill is right after. Okay, I'm looking at my notes. And then you get, is it after the escalator?
You might have elevator, Scott, you might have elevator down for the same reason I had elevator written down, which is when Peter takes a picture of the security guard, he escapes through the elevator, and the security guard just dangles from the roof.
I'm sorry, escalator kill is what I was trying to say. Yeah. But the elevator, yeah, you're right. My note about the elevator, earring mercenary on top of the elevator was what I reminded myself I had to be like, because he just goes, what is that? This movie has so much fun in it.
It's so dumb.
But
it's great.
And it also realizes what it's setting. It knows what it's set out to do. You know,
yeah,
like it's not. Yeah. It has no delusions about how stupid this concept is.
So this is not going to be neither my double feature or my what did I watch, even though it's what I did watch immediately after. So it was in fact my double feature. But after this movie was over, I put on The Pagemaster. And The Pagemaster has a smooth 75-minute runtime. And I thought, man, if Phantom of the Mall had a cool 75-80-minute runtime, I feel like I'd have... I think it would have jumped up a star rating, in all honesty, for me. Like,
damn.
It's just that it really... I think that middle... The first, like, 25 minutes, I was like, this movie is fucking moving. I am, like, having so much fun. And then it... It's a screeching halt for like 20-30 minutes, and then
we get to the reveal
of Eric, and it starts to rev itself back
though,
up.
And the only thing that recovers is for me is that parking lot chase when that dude gets fucking fishtailed and he goes flying. Did you guys see this dude's body ragdoll?
Oh, yeah.
There was little pops of excitement like that for me.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean,
like,
you've got the decapitation scene, the most bloodless decapitation ever captured.
Yeah, clean.
In a film.
Super clean.
Well, it's because it's a trash compactor. It just squishes down the neck and it's like,
protected
boop.
It.
Yep. So if you need...
Theoretically, if they didn't raise it back up, he'd still be alive.
I was just wondering, you know, we spend a little bit of time in Eric's lair until, you know, getting glimpses of it as he's practicing
He's just watching security
and
cameras
stuff.
And listening to sultry sax music.
And, like, he's obviously dressed really cool, but the location is not that dope. And I was trying to think of what it smelt like. To me... I think that it would smell like a lot of Axe body spray trying to cover up like the mildew smell, like of like dirty socks.
Yes.
You know, like that's
yes.
the smell that
it's,
I imagine.
It's a gym locker room that only gets cleaned by like a guy spraying some shit in the room.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's not.
Yeah.
It never gets a full deep. It's like a Planet Fitness gym room.
Yeah,
where because it's 24/7, there's never time to give it
you can't
the deep clean that it actually.
Clean. Yeah, Eric's always practicing. He's
ever vigilant.
Practicing.
That
he's
is
working
for sure.
out. He's doing his bow staff.
He hasn't even tried. He hasn't even tried to fix his voice, which somehow has been altered by the smoke, the fire.
The makeup on his face is actually pretty good. When he like finally takes off the mask, I'm like, I'm into
hard
this.
Hard disagree.
All right.
There's one moment where he turns and I see his eyeball. Other than that, I'm like, is he wearing like half a bag on his face? That
yeah, it's the
like,
eyeball part that Matt and I were about to say good things about. But for sure, the rest sucks.
The eyeball is great. But the other half of it where like even the and then they show the back and you can see like his hair. It doesn't.
Oh, I loved his rat tail.
Like, it doesn't part like it got burned. It just parts like it's covered by his mask somehow.
Did you guys,
horrible.
During any research that you did you happen to stumble upon the movie reviews for this?
No.
So Wikipedia has some of the movie reviews, and I just want to read a few of these because, dear Lord, did the critics not like this movie?
Okay, well, I got to crack this open for
it. Yeah, crack it open. Tell us what you're drinking, and then I'll tell you.
4th of July kittens from Fat Orange Cat, because this is a 4th of July movie. I was very
happy.
And
I have a La Croix. I have the limoncello because this is the ghost of a good movie, just like La Croix is the ghost of a good flavor. And I went with limoncello because this is the most Italian New Jersey movie that we've talked about in, well, since Blades, I guess.
That pianist is really selling it for me. I think he's
it's
the,
also
he's
the like the hotel or hotel the what's it the pres the owner
the mayor the is woman or the man?
No, so Morgan Fairchild, she seems very Jersey Shore, 80s Jersey Shore. But I'm talking about the guy that owns the mall.
Like, oh, the mall
I don't know if he's the owner or if he's like the
investor,
supervisor, whatever he is. And his shitty son is the one that like steals quarters from the video games. All of them just are giving me. Such a hard Italian Jersey vibe.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah. No, they really are, which is weird for it being in that fucking beautiful. The architecture of this mall, like this beautiful LA mall, right? Like the quintessential.
Does it still exist?
So not in this capacity. The Sherman Oaks, I think it's still the Sherman Oaks Galleria, but I'm sure it's been renovated.
It got blown up twice.
Yeah, it just can't survive. The architecture of the mall made me so happy. I was like,
I worked in
a place like this. I miss these back hallways that like no customers can go down, but if you're an employee, like you have to go through there every day.
Yeah, to enter your shop. That's how I worked at all the places for me, straight edge Matt Kelly to work. I worked at a place called Habitat that was
a head shop, right?
Yep, it's a head shop. It just sells hemp shit and incense burners. And I was their star employee. So there were two reviews that were listed that I wanted to mention. The Los Angeles Times said that Phantom of the Mall is hands down the most inept, pointless, an inane adaptation of the Phantom of the Opera. Scarcely a scene isn't gross or ridiculous. Scarcely a performance isn't forced or shallow. Scarcely a line of dialogue isn't blubbering and awkwardly cliche. There's almost a perfection to the awfulness here that almost commands respect. And the Australian review site efilmcritic.com said Eric's revenge is worse than Montezuma's revenge.
They thought that they really had something with that review too, which I think is hilarious. Not the review, but rather that they thought that they were clever with that, because that's some like high school shit.
100%. We near the end of this movie, and it's like now there's a bomb. We got to get people out.
Oh yeah, the bomb is such a dumb subplot.
The bomb is so unnecessary.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey, do you have an idea for a podcast but don't know where to start? Or do you have an already existing podcast that you want to take to the next level? Well, check out weknowpodcasting.com. From concept development to theme music to editing to logos, weknowpodcasting.com is a one-stop shop for all things pod. Don't hesitate to hit us up. We're very nice.
Scott, all in all, I had a blast. I know I'll rewatch this one. Like,
yeah,
as much shit as I've talked, it is... It is the right type of ridiculous for shit like I do, like a weird ass movie.
Shout out Arrow Video for putting it out on Blu-ray, which is insane.
Yeah. Dear Lord. So Scott, I want you to go first.
I think I'm gonna go with Idle Hands because there's a lot of air duct scenes in both.
Fair.
Plus, they both really realize what they are, and
they have just a very similar energy. When I was watching it, I was like, I mean, the obvious choice is Chopping Mall, but I think that since it's the same mall, we can't pick that as like an obvious one. We could do that as a triple feature, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Kyle, how about you?
I'm going with another Phantom, particularly my favorite Phantom, Phantom of the Paradise.
I mean, Matt, are you so sad right now?
No, because I have, this is another classic ridiculous Matt Kelly double feature pick that I have up my sleeve. That's why I wanted to go last. There is a subplot that is introduced to this movie and they do absolutely nothing with it. In which Paulie Shore's character shows the journalist that hidden underneath all of the Muzak that they're forced to listen to in the mall is hidden messages about shopping. So, of course, I want to double feature this with Josie and the Pussycats.
Nice. No, that's... And that's, I feel like they have similar energy as well. I think that would totally work. And, man, I love Josie and the Pussycats. Yeah. What a great film.
One of the top IMDb trivia points was also that the Muzak in that scene was regularly used in SpongeBob SquarePants as background noise of Bikini Bottom. That like weird surfy music.
They must have known.
Is there some sort of like connection?
No, my best bet is that it's probably just generic stock.
Oh yeah,
Muzak music that was just free to grab. Well, Scott, you picked this, and we all watched it. What's something that maybe you only watched that you think we should know about?
I know that a couple weeks ago at this point, Kyle gave his review of Evil Dead Rise.
Yeah.
And I watched it as well. And I wanted to... So I have two mini reviews, right? So one is Evil Dead Rise. I didn't really like it that much, actually. I was pretty disappointed, not because it's a bad movie... Because it's objectively fine. It's not like too long. I liked the lore that the way that they now have canonized three Necronomicons. They say that in the movie. So one is obviously Ash Williams' Necronomicon. One is, I believe, the Necronomicon from Evil Dead 2013.
Oh, so like small publisher put out these books.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. And then there's the Evil Dead Rise Necronomicon. And I believe that they summon different demons or a different sect of demons because that would explain kind of the way that they act differently. And I really liked... I mean, Evil Dead 2013 is my favorite of the series. Really, it is. I mean, I've been pretty vocal about that because I think that the Deadites are... what I would have written, you know, if I was in charge of it. I've been like, yeah, they self-mutilate because they hate humans and they hate the living and they want to, you know, be fucking perverse and evil. And this didn't really go far enough with any self-mutilation. It was mostly just hurting other people. And I didn't mind a lot of the damage that people got dealt. I thought that the gore looked great. My real sticking point with this movie is the fact that they copped lines from the original Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2, like the I'll Swallow Your Soul and Dead by Dawn and so at least one other one. And it felt like we don't need another fan service thing like that. Like this movie would have been so much better if they had avoided that. Because there's some cool shit that they did. Like, I loved the elevator scene. But I was like, that's a sign of, like, really lazy, not lazy writing. It's like they were unsure of themselves. And I think that showed that they could have, they had the money to do so. And they just didn't really take that step that I really wanted them to and make something that was worth spending all this money on. You know, and also I didn't need to have another chainsaw scene. And I liked the way that they connected the cabin scenes with the high rise scene or the high rise setting. I mean, it's cool. I mean, I thought that was a cool way to end it, but it just really took it down from like a 7 to a 5.5 out of 10 for me that they were so unsure of themselves that they were like, people aren't going to like this if they don't get that fan service. Like, fuck you. We would like it just fine because we love Deadites. We don't need to hear them say the exact same thing every movie. So that's my two cents about Evil Dead Rise. And I do also agree with Kyle's assertion that for a movie about motherhood,
it's weird that it's written by a couple dudes, you know?
The more and more I stewed on it, the more I was like, I like it. Like, it's fine, but I just, my issues with it still do exist.
Yeah. And so the other thing I just wanted to mention real quick is that I watched Influencer on Shudder. Now, this is not a Scott movie at all. I was waiting for it to become a Scott movie, and it was like an hour and 45 minutes. Never became a Scott movie. Now, it's very, very well shot. They definitely had a good budget for it. I think it's more of a Kyle movie, actually. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's a thriller. It is not a... It's more of a character study thriller. But I found a lot of it interesting, and I think that it was well acted and well directed. But it never went where I wanted it to go. But I hit that hour mark, and I was like, well, I'm here. I need to know how it ends. I know it's not going to end. I know it's not going to progress into something that I wanted to see, but I finished it and it's a good movie. So highly recommend for people that like thrillers.
I watched a movie that similarly to Phantom of the Mall, I thought started off great, had like a great kickoff. And then it kind of like, as the movie went on, it petered downward. And I actually, when I watched it, I thought I was watching a critically acclaimed movie. And turned out I was incorrect. It was actually quite disliked at the time of its release, and I was confusing it with a other film in a similar vein. But I watched 1985's A Chorus Line, which
that was
you
panned.
Might
I could have swore that everybody loved that.
Same, the actual musical people loved. The film adaptation people hate it.
Okay.
And for those of you, I knew nothing about The Chorus Line beyond the song One Singular Sensation, Every Little Step She Takes. Like, I knew that song, and I knew the song Tits and Ass. Yeah.
I've not watched all of A Chorus Line ever, so.
Check out the song, the Broadway recording version of Tits and Ass hilarious. It's also called Dance 10 Looks 3. And it's a song about how she never got cast in anything because while her dances were a 10, her looks were a three, and then she got tits and ass, and now she gets cast in all the shows or whatever. The concept of A Chorus Line, at the start, I was like, I love this. I love that it is essentially, you are just watching a really twisted audition process to just be a background dancer in a show, and this, like, demented director who won't let you audition unless you reveal, like, your deepest, darkest secrets about your personal life. And it's almost horrific to a certain extent, and you can tell it's coming from like something very real. And I saw a review, Kelly Bishop from Gilmore Girls and Marvelous Mrs. Maisel and a lot of other Amy Sherman Palladino stuff, was one of the leads on Broadway, won a Tony for her performance. And I saw a review from her where she basically was like, the second that the director said that the show was about a bunch of young kids trying to make it, I already knew that he had fucked up the script, because that's not what A Chorus Line is about. A Chorus Line is about the desperation of people who've been doing this for years, and they think that this is their last shot to be somebody. And I could see that. Like, as the movie went on and on, the experiment of, like, could you make an entire movie that's essentially just actors on a stage taking commands from a director in the dark, started off really cool, and then, like, at about the hour and a half mark, when there were still like 25 minutes of movie still left, I was like, all right, can we just get to What I Did for Love and One and get out of this? because my attention span was officially petered out. But for the most part, I liked it. It's shot well. It's well acted. It just never fully comes together in the way that I think everyone had hoped an adaptation of Chorus Line would. All right, Kyle, take us home. What have you read, listened to, etc.?
So I'm also going to talk about a three, and that's Shark Attack 3 Megalodon. It's on Tubi, and of course, I mean, this is a movie that has been over the internet because of one particular line of dialogue that is absurd.
Well, you have to tell me what it is, because I don't know what Matt does, but I don't.
All right. Matt, so I'm just going to have you be Catalin Stone, which seems like it's actually a typo for Carolyn. Catalin, so I just need you to sigh and say, I'm exhausted.
Okay. I'm exhausted.
Yeah, me too. But you know, I'm really wired. What do you say I take you home and eat your pussy? So
what?
Yeah. This is from 2002. It is, you know, that's the reason I watched this movie was because I was like, I got to see this line in context. Carly's been vibing with like really bad.
Context, are there TikToks to it. It was an improv that are like, line.
is this TikTok like brought this back into the vernacular or some shit?
Not that I've noticed, but I'm also
I remember from YouTube. It was YouTube would share that scene and the guy on the jet ski jet skiing into the shark's mouth.
Into the shark's mouth. Yes. Yeah.
Moments that I always remember.
This movie, you know, predates Birdemic and Sharknado, and there, you know, this one uses a lot more stock footage of sharks, and then it has these weird like visual effects of superimposing bodies falling into sharks' mouths. It's a bad movie, but and it's even worse.
Sounds
that
terrible.
Tubi had an edited version of it. Like the boobs are blurred out. Like it's not
on
even
Tubi.
It's on Tubi.
Have we seen boobs on Tubi before?
I feel like we have to, right?
It's called Tubi. I don't know what that's supposed to mean, but I thought it was fun.
I feel like that would be the we see a lot of male genitalia because it's called Tubi.
The tubes, yes.
No, that's puby. You're getting puby.
Man, listen to some of our Patreon episodes. Yeah. hmmpodcast.com/Patreon or no, patreon.com/hmmpodcast.
You'll find it. I swear you'll find it. Yeah. You'll be able to find it. But it's just one of those. I will say that even with an edited version of it, it still plays like a really, really low budget, poorly made shark movie from 2002, and like that's lovely. You know, that's exactly what Carly and I wanted, despite the lion not being there. It just stops at the word eat. Yeah. So when I take you home and eat, sounds right. Very lovely. But there's still a lot of like weird, overtly sexual interactions between Catalin Stone and everybody else. Everybody's
such
just like
weird
sexually harassing her like throughout this whole movie. It's fucked up. And she's just like not giving it back, but she's like, you guys better watch your eyes. And it's like, Jesus Christ.
Okay. Watch your eyes because her boobs are going to poke them out or
her butt in the cargo pants, the low rise cargo pants is just too hot for TV.
I remember seeing that in those commercials in the 90s when I was up late in the summer.
Yeah. You better watch out what you do with that lotion, Matt Kelly.
Well, speaking of things too hot for my young eyes, that was 1989's Phantom of the Mall, Eric's
Amazing.
Revenge. We will be back next week with even more horror movie night goodness.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.